Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right-hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 135 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Got some upcoming shows. August 16th at the Virgil here in Los Angeles. That is a free show. September 27th at Tacoma Comedy Club in Tacoma, Washington. More dates to be announced. Today you're going to hear round one from a show recorded January 30th, 2015 at the San Francisco Sketchfest featuring Matt Lieb, Joanne Schinderly, TJ Chambers, Aaron Foley, and Barbara Holm, reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy. Please give it up for your first round one competitor who's brought a prepared piece, Matt Lieb.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Hey, pal.
Hey, good to see you. Hey. How you guys doing?
They're okay. Doing great, man.
Yeah, they're doing pretty good. All right, so here's my piece. Just a little note. All of the dialogue is real. It is directly from a transcript. Everything else, well, that's the fiction part. All right. The stage is empty, and an attenuated murmur is seeping into the main showroom of the Long Beach Performing Arts Center as the crowd files into their seats. The room is buzzing with anticipation. The stage lights go up to reveal two red leather chairs angled slightly towards each other, and suddenly a man with tight off-white slacks and a headset microphone enters the stage and the crowd applauds. Hello, everyone. My name is Chris Anderson, and welcome to TED. Today, I am in conversation with a very special man with a very special dream, not only for himself, but for the betterment of mankind. From this very mind, we've seen revolutionary ideas such as PayPal, Tesla, SpaceX, Solar City, and who knows what else, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Elon Musk. The crowd of 20 to 40-something white males cheers in ecstasy as Elon enters the stage. Elon hears the crowd screaming his name and aching for his words, but he avoids eye contact with them and instead focuses on Chris as he makes his way towards the adjacent leather chair. Chris tries to hold eye contact with Elon for as long as he can before he can feel himself blushing bright red. And he eventually averts his gaze in contrition, not unlike a child attempting to gaze upon the sun.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Chris.
Elon! What kind of crazy dream would persuade you to think of trying to take on the auto industry and build an all-electric car?
Well,
Elon pauses for a moment to consider the question. If there was one thing Elon was known for, it was thoughtful and thorough contemplation on the subject of sustainable energy. If there was a second thing he was known for, it was his full and often moist lips that accentuated his geometrically pleasing teeth when he smiled.
Well, it goes back to when I was in university. I thought about what are the problems that are most likely to affect the future of the world or humanity. This is real, all right? The sustainable energy problem is the biggest problem that we have to solve this century, independent of environmental concerns. In fact, even if producing CO2 was good for the environment, given that we're going to run out of hydrocarbons, we need to find some other sustainable means of operating. The crowd bursts into laughter and applause. Chris smiles at Elon's facetious suggestion that CO2 could be good for the environment. His intentional dig at global warming deniers is just the kind of thing that Chris has always admired about Elon. That, and the way his dark brown eyes seem to be simultaneously gentle and commanding, like those of a well-fed grizzly bear. Chris bites his lower lip, as if he was using his teeth to restrain his mouth from saying something or doing something without his permission. So you really
picture a future where a majority of power in America within a decade or two, within your lifetime, it goes solar?
I'm extremely confident that solar will be the majority power in less than 20 years. I made that bet with someone about it. Chris's upper lip begins to quiver uncontrollably. The thought of a sustainable and infinitely renewable power source has always turned him on. But the thought of it coming in less than 20 years and with Elon Musk at the forefront caused a libidinous arrhythmia in his heart. And he felt a red heat rushing towards his crotch. The confidence of Musk. The brashness of Musk. The Musk of Musk. It was almost too much for Chris to take.
Who did you make a bet with?
Well, with a friend who will remain nameless. Just
between us.
Well, I made the bet, and I think 2 or 3 years ago, and I think we'll see more power. But tell me his fucking name! Chris thought to himself in frustration. Was it Mark Zuckerberg? Was it Marissa Mayer? Was it Barack Obama? All three were completely plausible. Elon's reluctance to reveal the person on the other side of this wager was most certainly a power play to show Chris who was in command. And to highlight the subtle display of dominance, Elon began slowly rubbing his ever-hardening cock.
All right, so let's get back to another bet that you made with yourself, I guess. A kind of crazy bet. You made money from the sale of PayPal, so much money, and you decide to build a space company. Why on earth would you do something like that? The audience bursts into nervous laughter at the reductive language of space company.
Elon stifles a laugh and slowly licks his lips at Chris as he readies a response. Well, the goal of SpaceX is to try to advance rocket technology and to have rapidly and fully reusable rockets. Chris is now drenched in sweat as the thought of Elon Musk's hard, thick, and fully reusable rocket burrows his way into his brain like a carnivorous earwig. The audience feels the sexual tension in the room at the Long Beach Performing Arts Center and fills with the hot breath of ravenously horny and ambitious men. The hard, throbbing ambition of Elon's rocket. Chris struggles to wrap his mind around it, but begs to wrap his mouth around it.
So you've somehow slashed the cost of building a rocket by 75%, depending on how you calculate it. How have you done this? NASA has been doing this for years. How have you done this?
Chris is now noticeably drooling, and his cock is fully erect. A small pool of pre-cum darkens his off-white trousers. Elon watches Chris's descent into a liquid mass of animal secretions and begins untying his shoes. We've made significant advances in technology of airframe and engines and electronics and launch operations. Elon takes off his right shoe, places it under his seat. Elon then takes off his left shoe, throws it into the audience. Two men, both wearing lanyards and a business suit with no tie, begin to wrestle over the shoe. The smaller of the two men grabs the shoe and begins huffing it from the inside. The larger man grabs the lanyard from around the smaller man's neck and begins to choke him. Give me the fucking shoe, he cries. But rather than attempt to free himself, the smaller man grips the shoe tighter and summarily chokes to death. The larger man grabs the shoe and attempts to swallow it whole like a bird and also chokes to death. There's a long list of innovations that we've come up with there, and they're a little difficult to communicate in this talk, right now. Elon pulls off his pants, folds them, and places it under his seat. He isn't wearing any underwear because he is, like, so radical and eccentric. I've heard that you haven't patented this stuff. No, we won't patent. We don't. You know, since our primary competitors are national governments and the enforceability of patents is questionable. Elon begins stroking his hard, white, South African-born British-Canadian cock, reveling in his own success and power. That's really, really, really interesting. But the big innovation is still ahead, and you're working on it now. Tell us about this. Chris crawls over to Elon on all fours and looks at him dead in the eye. Elon knows this look. It's the look of a man who's begging to be face-fucked for the sake of human progress. Elon readies his rocket-like cock to explore the deep space within Chris's deep throat. Absolutely. So the thing about rockets is they're all expendable. Elon kicks Chris's expendable cock to illustrate his point. Chris yelps a little, and Elon guides his mouth gently towards his erect penis. The space shuttle was an attempt to use a reusable rocket, but even the main tank of the space shuttle was thrown away every time. Yeah, suck that dick. So maybe he didn't say that. So the space shuttle ended up costing $1 billion per flight. Obviously, that doesn't work very well, so it's important that the rocket have multiple stages and be able to come back. Elon begins savagely ramming Chris Anderson's head on his cock. Glock, 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 glock. Wow, reusable rockets. Yes. The audience bursts into a sound that is a mixture of applause, barks, and grunts. They have begun masturbating, and not only to the sight of Elon face-fucking Chris Anderson during his TED Talk, but at the thought that they may live to see a colony on Mars. We're actually, we've been making some good progress in testing the vertical landing portion of the flight, the sort of terminal portion, which is quite tricky, and we've had some good tests. Glug, 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 glug. Chris wipes his mouth and says, how cool is that? Elon, how have you done this? These projects are so... PayPal, SolarCity, Tesla, SpaceX, they're so spectacularly different. They're such an ambitious projects at scale. How on earth has one person been able to innovate in this way? What is it about you? Those are all direct quotes. Elon pauses for a moment, like he does, sits back in his chair, and lifts his knees next to his ears, so that Chris can begin slurping his anus and tongue-fucking his asshole. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. I mean, I work hard. I work a lot. I work a lot of hours. Well, I have a theory. Okay, well, finish me off first. No, okay, my theory is you have the ability to think at a system level of design that pulls together design, technology, and business. Elon begins stroking his soaking wet dick while Chris fingers his asshole. Elon opens his mouth wide and sticks his tongue out, struggling to lick his own cock. So if TED was TBD by design, technology and business into one package, synthesized in a way that few people can, and this is the critical thing, feel so damn confident in that click-together package that you take crazy risks. Elon leaves his chair, lies on his back, puts his feet over his head, known in yoga as the halasana pose. He opens his mouth wide as he attempts his most ambitious venture yet, sucking his own dick. You bet your fortune on it. You seem to have done this multiple times. I mean, almost no one can do that. Elon's cock draws closer and closer to his mouth, and he drips pre-cum on his tongue. Is that... Could we have some of that secret sauce? Can we put it into our educational system? Can someone learn from you? Elon begins coming in his mouth and face, but as he does, his neck finally snaps under the weight of his own ambition. Now paralyzed, Elon Musk chokes to death on his own cum and, still being in the halasana pose, shits all over his face. It is truly amazing what you've done, boys and girls watching. Study physics. Learn from this man. Elon Musk, I wish we had all day, but thank you so much for coming to TED. That was awesome. That was, look at that, really cool. Look how cool, awesome. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Matt Lieb. Our death count is at 3. That's a strong number from a first piece. Ladies and gentlemen, keep it going for your second competitor, Joanne Schinderle.
I wanted to share with you guys a kid's book that meant a lot to me called Love You Forever. A mother held her new baby that she just bought from the internet and very slowly rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she held him, she sang, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my fuck toy you'll be. The baby grew. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was 2 years old and he ran around to the house like a goddamn banshee. He pulled all the books off the shelves, one of them landing on his mother's crack pipe, breaking it in half. He'd pull all the food out of the refrigerator, which wasn't much, just a bag of sugar, cranberry juice, and beef jerky from 7-Eleven. One time he flushed a watch down the toilet, which happened to be the only heirloom worth of value that was set aside for the pawn shop that day. Sometimes his mother would say, this kid is driving me crazy. I've thought about leaving him in a box on someone's doorstep, but that little fuck would find his way home, I know it. I can't look him in the eye. He reminds me too much of his father. Well, what would have been his father? I can't believe he left me. I can't do this alone. It was his father's idea to have him because I'm barren. And then they'd start an RV ranch together and then our son could take over. That was the plan. But now I'm just here in Arizona by myself and I fucking hate hot weather. She'd tell everyone at the bus stop. But at night, when that 2-year-old was quiet and she had eaten an entire bottle of Lunesta, she'd open the door to his room, crawl across the floor, look up over his bed, and if he was really asleep, she'd pick him up and place her cold, hard nipple in his mouth. In her dozy state, she'd imagine her wet t-shirt days in college. Oh, Ricky, she'd moan as a small 2-year-old mouth was slopping on her teat. Ricky was the name of her college boyfriend. He was a muscle monkey with a mullet and a dick the size of a giraffe. They had several abortions together during their semester they dated. Remembering that trauma and overtaken by zombie pills, she placed that baby on her stomach and she put her feet up as if she was in stirrups. She grunted and moaned while she placed that baby on top of her stomach. She grunted and moaned while vividly imagined this baby passing through her birth canal. After several minutes of moaning and aggressive aggregation, she orgasmed. Like that one lady did during the water birthing on YouTube. Covered in adopted mom jizz, she held her baby while rocking him back and forth. Back and forth, she's saying, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my fuck toy you'll be. But that little boy grew. And he grew and he grew. And he grew until he was 9 years old. And he never wanted to come home because he was mad at his mom for sleeping with all of her teachers. Our house smells like cigarettes. And last week I saw you putting Mr. Fletcher's penis in your mouth. You thought I was watching Family Matters in the living room, but I know what you were doing. It was Mr. Fletcher's penis in the kitchen with the lubricant. This house is like a fucked up game of Clue, and I don't want to play anymore. he said while violently throwing a can of Surge across the room. Now, son, hush, the mother replied. Straight A's don't just grow on trees. Sometimes you gotta put out in order to pull ahead. My holes are gonna get you through college. Now, sweetheart, please make sure you take a bath tonight. Mr. Fletcher said all the kids are starting to call you Dick Cheese. But at nighttime, when he was asleep and she had popped a handful of Oxycontin, the mother quietly opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, looked up over the side of the bed, and if he was really asleep, she'd take the pants off that 9-year-old boy. And with a rag full of diluted bleach, she'd wipe the Dick Cheese from his prepubescent kid rod. With hillbilly heroin blasting through her veins, she stared at her son's shiny finger-sized penis. It looks like rubber, she thought. Does it taste like rubber? And ever so gently, she slid that adopted kid dick into her dry mouth. Nope. Mom, I'm cold, said the sleepy pantsless boy. She picked him up and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my fuck toy you'll be. That boy grew. And he grew and he grew and he grew. And he grew until he was a teenager, and he had strange friends, and he wore strange clothes, and he listened to strange music like Taking Back Sunday and the Bodyguard soundtrack. His best friend Terry, a loudmouth yuppie with chiclet teeth, spent every day at their house. Dude, I gotta be super honest with you. I've jerked off to your mom several times. Like, I'll wake up with a rock-hard morning wood, take a piss, and, like, one time it shot back in my face. Because I was just so rock fucking hard thinking about titty fucking your mom aggressively. Dude, gross. She's so drugged out. I'm sure her cunt is like worm-like and shriveled. You don't want to stick anything of yours in that, the son shot back. Because secretly the boy had a crush on Terry, but would have never let his secret out for fear of losing the only form of friendship and person he'd ever loved. Dude, but like, hear me out. I think your mom, like, she'd probably hump my brains out, right? Like, I'm not that young, Terry said while popping a zit in the mirror. But at nighttime when those teenagers were asleep, that mother, overhearing her son's choice of words about her old cunt, hopped on Google to find out that if you line your labia lips with opium, you can reach optimal clitoral stimulation. So she snuck into those boys' rooms, staring at Terry's blonde locks. It reminded her of a young Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. Vigorously rubbing her thighs together, she awoke Terry. And as she crawled across the floor wearing only a silk cream nightie and never breaking eye contact, shh, come here, she whispered. Terry quietly climbed over her son, got down on the ground next to the bed. I brought you a midnight snack, she said, while dumping cherry-flavored Pop Rocks all over her soaking wet pussy. The Pop Rocks instantly started to fizzle. Better eat up before it gets cold. She seduced while running her fingers through the back of his hair and force-feeding his tongue under her kaleidoscope cunt. The combination of eating euphoric opium pellets, Pop Rocks, and a used tuna caused Terry to seizure. As he lay there convulsing, the son wakes up and screams in confusion, and his mother with dilated pupils picks up her son and rocks him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and saying, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my fuck toy you'll be. Well, that teenager grew, and he grew and he grew and he grew until he was a grown-ass man, and he left home and got a home of his own across town. But sometimes, on dark nights, after drinking a homebrew combination of Carlo Rossi table wine and rubber cement glue, the mother got into her car and drove across town. You can see the picture. There's a ladder on top of the car. If all the lights were off in her son's house, she'd throw rocks at the windows and sneak in, stealing all of his bleach and metal spoons. But before exiting through the window, she'd crawl into his bed, and she would pretend that she was the big spoon. She'd take her pants off and wet a little herself a little bit, and she'd rock him back and forth, and hum, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always as long as I'm living, my fuck till you'll be. Well, that mother, she got older. And she got older and older. And one day she called her son up, collect, from a jailhouse in Tucson and said, "You better come see me because I'm very old and I'm very sick." "Are you fucking kidding me?" he replied. "Last I heard from you, the police found you passed out in a church parking lot in Reno. You had gotten the words 'Christ saves' tattooed on your chest. It took dental records for the police to convince me that it was you. You ruined my fucking life. Do you know how much money in therapy you cost me? I can't even get an erection now unless I'm watching the Puppy Bowl at halftime show. And that shit only happens once a year. You can't YouTube it because the Animal Planet is goddamn greedy sons of bitches. And that's exactly what I am, Mom, a son of a bitch, because of you." "Son, I know we weren't the cookie cutter family, but I tried my best. Look, I'm calling to tell you about your father. Your whole life I never told you who he was, but recent events I think you should know. Your father was Bill Mays. The OxyClean guy? Yes, we used to have so much fun together in the woods. I loved him and his antics, and he left us, but he never forgot about us. I'm in his will." The boy immediately hung up the phone and drove to pick up his mother. On the intense ride back, he learned all about the will's deeds. And then as he drove to his mother's house and laid his mother down in the warmth of her own bed, he stared at her cold, clammy, half-dead on the outside body to match the rotting soul she's always carried on the inside. And with slight pity, he picked her up and rocked her back and forth, until he finally placed a pillow over her face while singing, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my meal ticket you'll be." And when the sun came home that night, he stood for a long time at the top of the stairs with his cat. And then he went into the room where his very new baby daughter that he bought from the internet was sleeping. He picked her up in his arms and very slowly rocked her back and forth, back and forth. And while he rocked her, he sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll love you for always. As long as I'm living, my fuck toy you'll be."
Joanne Schinderle. Can't wait for the sequel, huh, guys? It's cool if they're adopted. Keep it going for your third competitor, TJ Chambers.
Whew. Our death count is at 4, and also I wish I was dead, so I'm going to call it 4.5.
Yeah. I'm pretty drunk. Let's rock this. Yep. The house lights at San Francisco's historic Fillmore Theater blazed their full luminescence as the remaining concertgoers ambled out of its hallowed halls. Here and there, an empty plastic beer cup or a torn asunder over 21 wristband were the only evidence of the prog folk rocking that had just taken place. Directly in front of the stage, the pit was littered with crumpled charcoal drawings, remnants of the quirky girl who'd chosen to spend the entire show sketching her feelings instead of dancing. Just backstage, Colin Molloy sighed. It had been another successful Decemberist show. He shuffled past the guitar tech who was packing up his prized acoustic electric bouzouki, the one he'd had custom inlaid with an ironic hammer and sickle, a wink at socialism during a show that people had paid $41.50 plus fees to see. He wiped his brow with a hand-crocheted scarf emblazoned with the image of a regal crane, yet another wretchedly fey gift presented to him by some fucking theater kid fan. Pushing the green room door open, Molloy noted in passing that Jenny, the band's accordion and keyboard player, had already folded herself neatly into the NPR tote bag which served as her domicile when the Decemberists were not on stage. He sighed and heaved himself down the pile of thesauruses that acted as his makeup chair. Just as he began to pour a refreshing glass of Petit Sirah from his whalebone decanter, a security guard dropped off the last of the night's gift from fans, a pirate hat lovingly folded from the parchment of a mid-1800s Nova Scotian shipping manifest. Molloy snorted and tossed it in the trash can, or as he called them, dregs receptacles, for reasons passing understanding. whilst quaffing his wine, as it always did when the scarlet fruit of French onological labor tumbled down his throat, little Colin came to life. Little Colin was his cock. He had always called it that, his normal penchant for theatrical storytelling, oddly bereft when it came to nicknaming that sweet, sweet dick. He felt it push against the waistband of his pants. Sartorial togs, which had been standard issue for the Russian Navy around the time that Sergei Eisenstein made Battleship Potemkin. With his members stiffening like the corpse of a suicidal star-crossed lover, Malloy closed his eyes and drifted off to slumber. His dreams were, as ever, somewhat sepia-toned, a quirk which had brought him a financial windfall when he sold the idea for the Valencia filter to Instagram, even forcing them to name it after his very own song. In his mind's eye, Colin saw himself and little Colin walking through a Victorian mansion, its many balustrades and gables standing vigil over a big-ass fuck party. Every room burst at the proverbial seams with characters from different Decemberist songs fucking the fuck out of each other. A legionnaire railed a dirigible captain, while a Japanese princess fingered herself under 36 layers of silken kaftan. The door to another room swung open, revealing a fleeting glimpse of a whaler standing atop a thrashing beast, thrushing a blunted harpoon sensually in and out of its sopping wet blowhole. Malloy almost came right there in his pantaloons. Somewhere betwixt the blushing handmaiden filleting the operator of a steam engine and the Civil War bride going reverse cowgirl in the shape-shifting deer, Malloy spotted the room he desired most of all at this bookish lit orgy, the room of rock critic respect. Feeling himself throb, he cautiously pushed the solitique door on its axis. It swung open to reveal his bandmates, the entire phalanx of Decemberists, standing in one corner, tuning their theremins and 12-string Rickenbacker guitars and stand-up basses and human ribs. That's right. One of these assholes played percussion on the ribs of a child bride whose skeleton had been preserved after a failed uprising in some fictional Grand Budapest Hotel-ass country. In the other corner, Malloy saw two figures. Their air of unearned haughtiness told him immediately who they were. These could only have been Pitchfork.com album reviewers. One of them stood silently, cutting her arm in evenly spaced increments with the sharp edge of the new Slater Kinney vinyl. Just to feel something, anything. The other, a man, stood watching the Decemberists finger their period-accurate instruments and whispered, meh, 5.9 out of 10. Colin instantly sprung into action. He bounded weightlessly across the room and grabbed both critics. Little Colin spontaneously became Little Collins, in the type of multiplicative dick-splitting event which seems hot in dreams but would be abjectly horrifying anywhere else. He slid himself into them both, aching for the respect which he assumed their respective dude and lady holes could provide. Oh, call me Sufjan, he commanded. That's right. Call me Ben Gibbard. Open your death cabs. I'm coming in, bitches. And I mean bitches in the way of like a mangy dog who stows away in a sailing vessel and keeps the deck swabbers company while they hunt mermaids or whatever. What the fuck do I know? I've never actually listened to one of my songs all the way through. Colin Malloy and the rock critics and the Decemberists and the whales and the Infantas and the star-crossed fuckers all came at the same time, spewing fountains of jism, spelled G-Y-S-M, because maybe that's how they did it in olden times. Anyway, spewing fountains that covered Portland and Brooklyn and Austin and Silver Lake and the Mission until their rapturous fans who lived within had to wade through hip-deep pearly streams to order their IPAs and their craft sausages and whatnot. Colin Malloy smiled. It had been another successful December show.
TJ Chambers, keep it going for Aaron Foley.
Good evening. Thank you. If I slur, it's because I'm drinking and nervous. Okay, here we go. Brian makes me do this because he knows I grew up Catholic. All right, let's do this. Yeah, it's going to be fine. It probably won't be. The title of the story is Nancy Drew, The Mystery of the Wet Pants. You guys are all 12. Maybe you can Google it. The loud ring of the phone broke the silence in the room, signaling the start of another workday. Nancy Drew Detective Agency, this is Roz. How may I help you? Please hold. Nancy! Nancy Drew, famed teenage amateur sleuth, was now a professional private detective well into her 40s. After 15 years of solving high-profile cases in New York City, Nancy moved her agency to Suffolk County, Long Island, craving a quieter existence. Roz's voice jarred her from a usual mid-morning nod-off. Mr. Rizzo, line one! I got it, retorted Nancy. And for the 80th time, we only have one line. Just say Mr. Rizzo is on the phone. Hi, Mr. Rizzo, it's Nancy. Yes, I totally understand. I will. Yep, yes. No, we haven't located your wife yet, but we're working on some new clues. What are they? Nancy's eyes quickly scanned the office, landing on a picture of four Shetland ponies playing poker. She might have been involved in a late-night gambling ring. Oh, she never played cards? She hated them? Well, a lot of people have secrets. Hidden agenda, smoke and mirrors, tomfoolery, whatnot. Listen, Mr. Rizzo, I have the police department on line two, so I'll just call you right back. Nancy hung up the phone. Fuck! She exclaimed, and then reached into the top drawer of her desk, pulling out a bottle of her Get Crackin' pills. A homemade elixir of Adderall and poppers, providing her the extra energy and focus she required for another tough case. She was also exhausted this morning because her husband, Ned Nickerson, her longtime beau, had woken her up at 5 a.m. to put his dragon into her lair. She couldn't stand when he used stupid fucking words to describe sex. It made her want to become the dragon and breathe fire all over his hairless, soft body. But she was already awake, worried about the case, so why not? Ned reached over to the side table, grabbed a large handful of lube, and smeared it all over his pulsating medium cock. A necessary step because Nancy hadn't been wet since the 90s. After he informed her that he was armed and dangerous, Nancy swung her long, tan, tone-legged over his body, assuming the reverse cowgirl position. Ned loved to fuck her from behind so he can put his small man hands on her beautiful sculpted ass. It was also Nancy's favorite position as well because she could get caught up on the latest edition of Live Happy magazine. Actor Scott Foley from Scandal was on the cover, a show she really enjoyed. Olivia Pope, Nancy sexily let out. What? Exclaimed Ned, railing her from behind. Nancy caught herself. No, nothing. This is great. Keep going. She didn't know if she wanted to be Olivia Pope or fuck Olivia Pope, but it was also new and exciting. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. A text was coming in from Bess and George, Nancy's best friends. If you read the book, so. Anyway. They were always up for helping her crack a case. The text read, still on for Oksana's at noon? Yes, she confirmed. Nancy finally had a lead on the whereabouts of Diane Rizzo. For the past year, Diane was completing her master's degree in kinesiology at Ronkonkoma Community College. Sometimes after class, Diane and her fellow classmates would grab a nightcap at Oksana's, a Ukrainian bar a few blocks from campus. She hoped to unearth some clues. There was no time to waste. Nancy jumped into a heavily dented Subaru Outback and raced to the bar, already 20 minutes behind schedule. As she parked, she noticed George and Bess had already arrived. Sorry I'm late, you guys. I think I ran over a cat on River Street. I hope it was a wild one. Anyway, let's go in. George, the tomboy of the group, let out a sigh. Ugh, it's a dead end. We already questioned the bartender, and he didn't have any information. Damn it, said Nancy. You know what? Let me give it a try. I've had a lot of experience dealing with Eastern Europeans in the big city. I'll be right back. Nancy quickly put on a wig and glasses, headed in, and started questioning the bartender. Hello. My name is Virginia Lipinskaya. Good day. Great bar. Reminds me of homeland. Anywho, looking for a friend. She has disappeared Friday night, and I'm wondering if you have seen her. I know she comes in for the drink. Nancy slid the picture of Diane across the bar. The bartender replied, yes, she come in Friday. She was younger, with a younger man. He wasn't pleasant. They started arguing, and he grabbed her by the elbow, and they left. Nancy was struggling to contain her excitement. This could be the lead she needed. Nancy. Oh, that's great. I mean, not great for her. It sounds like she was kidnapped. But anyway, did you by chance catch his name? Yes, he looked young and Hispanic, so I called him. And his name on license said Javier. Usually it's Rodriguez or Gonzalez, but his first name was Javier, so I remember. Nancy was already halfway out the bar. Thanks so much. I owe you one, bartender. How about you take your hand, put it on my pants, and give my dragon a little shaky-shaky? Why does every man call their cock a fucking dragon? Nancy caught herself. Caja, sorry, I have to go, thanks. Nancy raced out of the bar and instructed George and Beth to follow her. Finally, a person of interest. Using her astute detective skills, she quickly uncovered Javier's home address. 15 minutes later, the ladies were across the street formulating a plan. Beth and George, you knock on the door and distract him. I'm going to double around back and break in. Don't be a hero. Call for backup if anything gets dicey. Nancy darted around the back, peered through the window, only to find an empty house. Then she looked down, spotting a suspicious-looking bulkhead, and picked the lock. She slowly descended the dark stairs. Hello, is anyone here? Shouted Nancy. Oh, my God, help me, a voice echoed. Diane, exclaimed Nancy. Yes, yes. As Nancy rushed towards her, someone slammed the door of the bulkhead, locking it. Oh, God, it's a trap. It seems like I'm always ending up in some sort of trap. As in every book, there's a trap, and you always got trapped. And then she was like, what am I? Yeah, it's fine. You guys are just turned 21. Nancy untied Diane, who quickly fell into her arms. Oh, my God, it's famed private detective Nancy Drew. I can't believe you're here. I followed your entire career. Their eyes locked. Time stopped. The air became thick with desire, with longing. The undeniable heat between them rose to at least 108 degrees. Diane grabbed the back of Nancy's neck. My whole life changed over the last 48 hours. I don't want to waste another minute of my life. I'm always putting others first. But this time is for me. I don't know if it's Stockholm Syndrome or what, but I need you to fuck me. Nancy's mouth dropped. Actually, Stockholm Syndrome is when you transfer feelings onto your captor. Fuck me now, shouted Diane. Yes. Yes, Nancy shouted back. As Nancy ripped off her pants, she realized she was incredibly wet. Her sexy juices were literally pouring down her leg like a water out of a fire hose. Wow, I haven't been wet since the 90s, she thought. Except when I'm watching Scandal or when I'm around the lady who bags my groceries or the lady hairdresser. Oh, shit. Nancy and Diane fucked like two rabid sex-starved animals. Nancy had her entire arm up Diana's vajayjay while Diana tongued her clit. When Nancy was about to swing her leg around for a reverse cowgirl, Diana stopped her, whispering, no, I need you. I want to see you. I need to see you. I need you so much. I need you too. I never want to be without you. I hope we never get out of this trap. But if we do, said Nancy, let's divorce our deadbeat husbands and get married immediately. I have 5 chihuahuas in the rescue, said Diane. I have a Subaru Outback, added Nancy. Thereby solving the mystery of the wet pants. Thank you.
Erin Foley. My favorite parts are where she horrifies herself. Giving over your final round one competitor, Barbara Holm.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
She brought me a beer. Extra points.
Yay. Hi. Fuckerfly, the story of sex serenity. Hoburn Washburn, a.k.a. Wash, sat at the helm of the spaceship Serenity, Firefly class. His muscles were big and strong beneath his light blue Hawaiian shirt. Wash picked up a plastic dinosaur and said, yes, yes, this is a fertile land, and we will thrive. We will rule over this land, and we shall call it this land. He picked up a second plastic dinosaur. I think we should call it your grave. Ah, curse your sudden but inevitable sexy betrayal. He turned behind him as he heard the door of the helm open. First rule of battle, said a voice behind him. He swiveled gracefully in his swivel chair to see his gorgeous, ethnically ambiguous wife, Zoe, standing with her hand on her hips against the door. First rule of battle, don't ever let them know where you are. And where you are should be inside my cockpit. Zoe straddled Wash's lap, her long, curly, dark hair cascading down her back. Wash's plastic dinosaur's toys clattered to the ground. Zoe's hips were as well-rounded as Nathan Fillion's acting abilities. she writhed over his big, giant, rock-hard cock. Zoe leaned down and breathed warmly into Wash's ear. Unable to control himself, Wash picked Zoe up by the hips. She wrapped her legs around his muscular, tight body. He slammed her against the wall of the ship, kissing her wet mouth and neck, squeezing her thighs with his strong hands. "Your body is like a Firefly-class spaceship," Wash murmured, "because there's lots of compartments to hide my cock in." Wash flipped Zoe around so that she was facing the wall. He whispered, "I'm going to ruin you like the Fox Network ruined our chances of getting a second season." His hand slid down the side of her hip and into her pants, wiggling back and forth rapidly, reavering against her G-spot. She gasped and screamed, squirting wet sex juices onto his hand. His hand, drenched in lady cum, looked shiny. Wash ripped her pants down as if they were the Alliance's defense shields. His floral cargo pant shorts fell to the ground, and he entered her tight, wet pussy with his spaceship. Zoe yelped as Wash's giant cock slammed repeatedly against her G-spot. "Oh my gosh," screamed Zoe. "Your dick is so big, it's almost like it's two dicks. They should call you Alan Two Dick." Wash pulled Zoe's beautiful dark hair really hard. Her hair was as thick and layered as a Joss Whedon plot arc. Zoe screamed harder as Wash slapped her big, round, tight, muscular ass. "Oh, sorry," said a voice. The loving couple turned to face the threshold of the door. There stood young, sweet Kaylee, wearing nothing but a pink nightgown and combat boots. Kaylee played with a drawstring from her nightgown neckline and muttered, "Going on a year now, ain't nothing twixt my nethers not run on batteries." Zoe smiled compassionately and held her hand out towards her good friend Kaylee. Kaylee approached her best friend Zoe and Wash. She smiled and said, "Also, I can fuck you with my brain." The three of them started making out really good with their moist, wet mouths. Wash knelt on his knees and started going down on Zoe while Kaylee kissed Zoe's neck. Zoe screamed as she came and then said, "When you can't run, you crawl. And when you can't crawl, when you can't do that, you find someone to fuck the fucking shit out of you." Wash fucked his beautiful wife and his adorable best friend with a skill so deft and nuanced, it was almost as if his dick was soaring as a leaf on the wind. Thank you.
Barbara Holm. Barbara, you can stay right here. See everybody from round one back up. Where are they at? Round one. They're coming. All right, so you guys are going to vote on a winner in just a second. First, I'm going to remind you of what everybody read. No voting yet. We started with Matt Lieb with Elon Musk's TED Talk, then Joanne Schinderly with Love You Forever, TJ Chambers with The Decemberists, Aaron Foley with Nancy Drew, and Barbara Holm with Battlestar, or whatever the fuck that was. Nerd. So pick a winner with your applause, starting with Matt Lieb, Elon Musk, TED Talk. All right, shut up. Joanne Schinderly, Love You Forever. Sure, now they're on board. TJ Chambers, The Decemberists. Aaron Foley, Nancy Drew. And Barbara Holm, Firefly. Well, that's Matt Lieb with Elon Musk, the round one champion. Holy shit, buddy. Congratulations. Big round of applause for all of your round one competitors.
That does it for round one. To hear round two from this show, you can download episode 136 next week. For details on upcoming shows, follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.